This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about cancer, but from the unique perspective of one of America's outstanding integrative physicians who treats cancer in an entirely innovative way. She is Dr. Linda Isaacs, and she knows whereof she speaks because she worked with her colleague, the late Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, for more than 20 years, using a nutritional approach for treating patients diagnosed with cancer and other serious degenerative illnesses. And this was a very, very committed practice involving hundreds, perhaps thousands of patients with some very, very remarkable successes. It's a rigorous program. It's a very, very original program. It's very demanding of the patients. And it's been backed up by papers published by today's guest, Dr. Isaacs, in peer-reviewed journals like Nutrition and Cancer and Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine. And she's also co-author of the book, The Trophoblast and the Origins of Cancer, which looks at a lot of theories about how cancer develops, but is in particular concerned with the use of enzyme therapy for the treatment of cancer, proteolytic enzymes. Dr. Isaacs has a conventional medical background. She received her Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Kentucky. She majored in biochemistry, and then she was elected Phi Beta Kappa. And she did her medical training at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine and completed a normal residency in internal medicine at the VA Medical Center at New York University Medical School. Guess what, Dr. Isaacs? You and I have that in common. And I think you were there a couple years after I was. No, actually, I think 1 year after I was. You were at the Manhattan VA. Very interesting. So we sort of overlapped there. She's board certified in internal medicine. However, she has combined her traditional medical training, with a very, very innovative perspective on, the way to treat cancer. So it's a pleasure having you on the program, Dr. Isaacs. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really have been looking forward to this. And I know that Nick used to speak about how much he enjoyed being on your show and what a good interviewer you are. So I'm really glad to be here. And I did not know that about the Manhattan VA. That's very interesting. I really enjoyed my time there. Yeah. But there were a lot of very good professors, and the chairman of the medical department was just a wonderful guy.
And, you know,
I had a good time there.
What's interesting is we do not come to this field of alternative medicine from total discouragement with conventional medicine, or because we flunked out of medical training and we had to do something different. You know, we share in common that we were rigorously trained. I was fascinated by my training in high-tech medicine. I just decided that wasn't the path that I wanted to tread. I wanted to take a different approach because so many fine doctors are delivering excellent medical care in hospital settings like we trained at. But we chose a different path. So mm-hmm. How did a board-certified internal medicine physician like you become interested in alternative approaches to cancer?
Well, there were two things that happened that sent me along that path. One of them was that I met Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez when I was a medical student, and he was an intern at Vanderbilt University. We were on the same medical team together. So I worked with him directly for about 6 weeks as a medical student. And during that time, he was already engaged in his research about the alternative methods devised by a Dr. William Donald Kelly, our predecessor in the work that we do. So he was willing to talk to anybody who was willing to listen about his research into this alternative cancer practitioner. I myself was perhaps a little more open-minded than the average medical student, partly because my mother had a long-time interest in nutrition, and so I had seen some things that she had tried work. Also, I tend to be by nature pretty pragmatic. In other words, if something works, I'm not going to be worrying too much about exactly why it works. That's one of the big hang-ups, I think, of the medical community now, is that if there isn't elaborate basic science backup for something that's being done, they just believe it doesn't work. But the reality is, you know, I think at the time I was in medical school, probably at the time you were in medical school, we didn't know why nitroglycerin worked for chest pain. We just knew that it did. You know, it wasn't until the early 90s that the whole nitric oxide pathways were found. So there's a long history of using things empirically and figuring out why it works after you realize that it does work. So I think I was a little more open-minded to non-traditional ways of dealing with things. The other thing that happened, besides meeting Nick and hearing all about his research, which was certainly huge, was that I myself got sick. I developed a chronic fatigue syndrome sort of problem, started feeling poorly during my medical school years. And during my internship, my health just went downhill. So I was able to finish my internship without, you know, making any terrible errors or anything like that. But I felt horrible by the time I got done. And so I went on the nutritional program that Nick was investigating in order to get better. And I did. So I have a personal experience with having turned my own health around. And I also have seen in the records about Dr. Kelly and then in our own work, patients get well. And so both of those things together have given me what I needed to go on this path.
So how did the work of William Donald Kelly influence you and Dr. Gonzalez in terms of a nutritional strategy? Because it's really a unique philosophy about nutrition that kind of predates the way we look at nutrition today, which is that basically different strokes for different folks, but it offers a lens through which you can look and make a determination of what diet is suitable for what type of patient, correct?
Right. Right. And I think for me, and I believe for Nick as well, the ultimate proof, of course, is how are the patients doing? And what he found when he went through Dr. Kelly's records was case after case after case of people that unquestionably should have been dead, that were alive and doing fine many years after their cancer diagnoses. So when he found those kinds of results, that gets you interested in what that practitioner is doing. Dr. Kelly's methods, there's a few basic principles involved, and it's basically the same thing that I'm doing now and that Nick and I did together for all those years. One consideration is diet, and the diets can vary for different types of people. What we've found over the years is that people with cancers like breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, they tend to do better on a more vegetarian type of diet, although there is some animal protein involved. And then there are people with different types of cancers, things like leukemia, lymphoma, the cancers of the immune system, sarcomas. Those patients typically will need some meat in their diet, quite a bit of it, in fact, because their metabolism is very different from the other folks. And that was something that Dr. Kelly figured out really empirically. But he found that he would get better results if he gave people the diet that worked the best for them. Dr. Kelly was also using large quantities of pancreatic enzymes, as well as nutritional supplements that, again, would vary for different types of people. And then the final piece of the puzzle was detoxification, which involved getting rid of the waste that we believe are created as the enzymes go to work on cancer cells.
So what are we talking about in terms of pancreatic enzyme? You know, many people are familiar with pancreatic enzymes to help digestion. So you may take two or three before a meal, you know, in hopes of better digesting your food. But we're not talking about that type of use of pancreatic enzymes, right?
That's right. It's a much larger amount. And I do think that taking enzymes with meals is very beneficial for everybody. But in this case, in the case of trying to treat cancer, we're talking about much larger doses.
Right. So we're talking literally, it might be scores of pills a day. I mean, the program is very rigorous.
It is very rigorous, and a patient on our protocol might be taking, by the time it's all said and done, in the neighborhood of 150 pills a day. Now, some of those are taken with meals to help strengthen the body overall and to help affect the underlying physiology of the body. But then the pancreatic enzymes are taken away from meals, 6 or even 7 times over the course of a day, fairly evenly spaced. And so that means that patients have to, for one thing, be good at swallowing pills. I can tell you that someone that says that swallowing pills is not for them, this mm-hmm. program is not for them, because right. it really requires that they do it. And secondly, it requires some organization. And smartphones and those kinds of gadgets have been a huge help, actually, because it's something that people can set up to remind them that it's time to swallow their pills. And most of our patients get into the routine. Of course, we ask a lot of questions before people make appointments mm-hmm. here to be sure that they understand what they're getting into. And being organized with all these pills is a big part of the package.
Yeah, one of the characteristics of Dr. Gonzalez's practice, along with you, because you worked with him through so many years, kind of unique and surprising to patients sometimes, is that you'd very carefully vet patients. You'd vet them based on whether you think you can help them, number one, because some patients have cancer situations where you might not find them amenable to natural therapy. And also, you vetted them in terms of commitment, frankly, because patients who were, wavering in their case, well, I'm going to try this, let me see if it works, or I'll try it for a couple of weeks, or I'll take some of the supplements. Those are not patients who really are likely to do well under this regimen, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So
that's right. So we have always tried our best to not take on patients that are not going to follow through, because it's a waste of their time and money, and time that we could be spent seeing someone else who would benefit. So we do try to be sure as best we can, and of course it's never going to be perfect, to take on people that can do it and will do it.
I found always fascinating when I talked to Dr. Gonzalez, both, when we'd meet in the street and have a conversation, or we'd, be at a party and we'd find each other and we'd talk to each other, or when he was on my program, because he was a frequent guest and contributor on Intelligent Medicine, is that he had a very unique and, I would say, idiosyncratic approach to cancer, because so-called alternative practitioners or integrated practitioners, complementary doctors, call them what you will, there's sort of a set of rules about things to use, popular supplements, the use sometimes of very low carbohydrate diets exclusively. That's not what Nick Gonzalez was all about. Or the use of common supplements that are popular, like, curcumin, for example, or, I'm not sure that he didn't use curcumin, but this is not, or green tea. There wasn't like a cancer protocol, that was like cancer protocols followed by 90% of integrative doctors. So it's a different set of supplements with a different underlying principles, correct?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And of course, I haven't spent time in the offices of other physicians to know exactly what they're doing when you get right down to it. I mean, what I do is what I do. But based on what I see when patients have visited some of these other folks and then come to see us, I would say that our approach is very different. Looking back over the years, we've had a lot of very successfully treated patients, and so that's what keeps us doing what we're doing. Another thing I'd comment is that, some other practitioners are doing something where, in effect, they're trying to combine their approach with the chemotherapy or radiation,
right.
You know, the other treatments that mm-hmm. a patient might be getting. And that's not really an interest of mine. I mean, sometimes we do have patients that come in and, you know, after they've been on the protocol for a certain amount of time, they, you know, for some reason it works out that they wind up on other treatments. And of course, I'm not going to abandon them. I'm going to
right.
do the best that I can for them. But I'm not looking to be doing, I think they would call it integrative oncology, where
or a synergy the
patient,
of
treatments. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, that's just not my interest. Let mm-hmm. me put it that way. And I don't think that the treatment we offer works well if it's combined with something like cytotoxic chemotherapy. So, you know, that's one of the considerations that we have when we're screening, is that if someone is saying that what they want to do is combine this treatment with what their oncologist is suggesting, what I would recommend is that they go work with a doctor who does that kind mm-hmm. of work.
Which is actually more what I do, more what I do to some extent, because I will often see patients who are undertaking conventional treatments for prostate cancer or breast cancer. And their concern is what's compatible, what's not going to get in the way, how can I support my immune system while I'm getting chemo or while I'm mm-hmm. getting radiation. And that's something that, you know, I think I have a bit of a handle on. But I think let's not misinterpret you. You're not saying that in all instances, conventional treatments for cancer are futile. There are certain cancers that are amenable to conventional treatment. And you'd be the first person to tell a patient, say, with early Hodgkin's disease, that maybe they should just do the conventional therapy, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, as you were speaking, I was thinking of a patient that I recently took on who did exactly that. She contacted our office, I believe it was a year, maybe a little more ago, with a new diagnosis of Hodgkin's. And we told her, you need to go get chemotherapy because for Hodgkin's disease, it works. And it did work. But she wanted to then see what she could do to, you know, just be sure that her system was working well and improve her health.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's a patient doing that. But absolutely,
no, she came after the treatment to bolster her immune system to prevent recurrence, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So once she completed her treatment. So it also was my impression that Dr. Gonzalez's treatments were not confined to just cancer patients. Cancer patients form the bulk of patients in the practice, but the principles involved could as easily be applied to patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, post-Lyme disease conditions, autoimmune diseases, and other, you know, challenging medical problems, right?
Absolutely, yes. And I myself have an example of that, because by the time I finished my internship, I could barely string two thoughts together. You know, once my adrenaline levels went down on July the 1st, when my internship year was over, I mean, I was a mess. And I went on this program and then was able to go back and finish up with no problem at all. And today I actually saw a patient who started with Nick probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and she had a chronic fatigue syndrome, was basically non-functional, and now she's working full-time while going to school full-time, and, you know, spinning all the plates and looks great, feeling well. So, you know, we have those kind of patients too, and it's really rewarding to see someone who at age 22 was non-functional, and now at age 26, 27, she's doing great.
Well, I know
so that
treatments.
It's just as much saving a life in a way as turning around somebody with colon cancer.
Indeed.
Because, yeah, things were not looking good, and now she's got the world at her feet.
I know that the treatments are highly individualized, because there's no, I think it's impossible to say of this methodology that there's a protocol for chronic fatigue syndrome or a protocol for colon cancer. It's about the patient. And you might treat several patients with chronic fatigue syndrome differently, or, you know, even patients with the same cancer differently based on their metabolism and some of your findings. But what worked for you? How did you turn things around when you were in med school, when you got together with Dr. Gonzalez and he started making some suggestions for changes for you?
Well, I really started on the protocol full bore after I got out of my internship, because before then I just simply didn't have the time. The first thing that I did, actually, was start with the coffee enemas. That's part of the detoxification routine and perhaps one of the most controversial things about the program that we offer. But I had as much reluctance as I think anybody would have to actually trying it. It sounds really strange. But most of our patients find they feel so much better when they do them. I certainly did. And I was willing to get up 45 minutes earlier than I had to in order to be in on time for my internship. I was getting up 45 minutes earlier to do those coffee enemas because I felt so much better when I did. And you remember how precious sleep is when you're an intern. Yep. So, that's a testimony to how much better I felt with them.
Were there diet changes as well?
I had already started eating organically, whole grains, those types of things. And for me, the type of diet that I historically have done best on is predominantly vegetarian. I don't eat huge amounts of red meat or poultry, but I do eat some, and organic food. I try my absolute best to do that. Mm-hmm. And then there were nutritional supplements. And for me at that time, really it was about supplements with the meal. So the proportions of things like calcium, magnesium, and potassium are what differ quite a bit from one patient to the next. In my case, tended more towards magnesium and potassium, less calcium. Mm-hmm. And then B vitamins, vitamin C, vitamin D. And one of the cornerstones of what we do are glandular extracts. It's freeze-dried animal tissue, basically. So there will be things like freeze-dried thymus, the master gland of the immune system, freeze-dried adrenal glands. Now, as I recall, and admittedly my recollection for that phase isn't all that good because I felt so terrible, but we didn't have everything available that we do now. I would have to say the program works a lot better now. Mm-hmm. When I was trying to get better, was during the same era when Nick was really starting from scratch on trying to get a medical practice going. And so we didn't have as many things to fall back on, but we had some.
And this program has something to do with adjusting the autonomic nervous system. There's a belief in the Kelly paradigm that was perfected and elaborated by Dr. Gonzalez along with you. To adjust the autonomic nervous system, can you comment on, the parasympathetic dominance and sympathetic dominance, and then you can actually utilize nutrition to push people more towards balance?
Right. Well, a lot of this Dr. Kelly figured out empirically, but there were actually some researchers before him, a Dr. Francis Pottinger and a Dr. Ernst Gellhorn, who described a fair number of the same findings. But the idea is that the autonomic nervous system, which is the nervous system that controls the things you don't have to consciously control, like breathing or your heart beating, that the autonomic nervous system can be out of balance and can be adjusted with the relative amounts of magnesium, potassium, and calcium. The sympathetic nervous system is the stress response system, the fight or flight system. So it will tend to speed up the heart, raise the blood pressure, and it will tend to suppress the digestion. And the sympathetic nervous system, when it's overactive, can contribute to health problems like high blood pressure. Magnesium and potassium actually can tone down an overactive sympathetic nervous system. So people with an overactive sympathetic system typically do well with a more vegetarian diet and with a lot of magnesium and potassium for supplements. Then there are people whose parasympathetic system is overactive.
What would be signs of that? What would be symptoms of that?
Yeah, the parasympathetic system is in charge of the rest and digest type of function. So it will tend to slow down the heart but speed up the digestion. But the parasympathetic system is also in charge of the immune system. And so many times people who have conditions that are in essence due to an overactive immune system. So for instance, somebody who's allergic to large quantities of things, or someone with one of the immune cancers like a leukemia, lymphoma, those people will tend to be people with an overactive parasympathetic system. And what can help balance that out would be a lot of calcium and a lot of red meat in the diet. Mm-hmm. So that's the characteristics of the more the parasympathetic dominant, the more carnivorous.
Paradoxically,
types.
In the parasympathetic, there's an attempt to make people more acidic, and I think that's one of the interesting features of this paradigm, is that in most holistic paradigms, you never can be too alkaline. You want a juice, you want to eat lots of raw vegetables, you want to take plenty of potassium and magnesium because that's supposed to be good for everyone. But actually, according to this paradigm, that may push people in the wrong direction and they need to go in an opposite direction, correct?
That's right. And what I would say there is that the majority of the people are sympathetic dominant. So if you're assuming that everybody's alike, then that assumption about needing to be more alkaline will be correct for a lot of people, but it won't be correct for everybody.
It seems to work. So it seems to work in the majority of people. It's what becomes the standard approach.
Exactly. And, people can fall into the same error in the other direction too. Like for instance, the Atkins diet, which is great for some people, and for some people it makes them extremely sick. And so, there are people out there that will say that everybody should be eating an Atkins type diet, but that doesn't work well for everybody either. But with my parasympathetic patients, the people that are too alkaline already do not need to get more alkaline. I tell them, if you walk into a health food store and say, I have cancer, what should I take? They said 95% of what they tell you, I will disagree with. So please talk to me before you start adding things.
Right. Yeah, it kind of goes against the cliches or the verities of alternative medicine. It's funny, alternative medicine purports to be so innovative, but there's sort of an orthodoxy of alternative medicine that sometimes people succumb to, and they need tailored guidance to make the right choices. And that's something certainly you offer. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause because we covered a lot of ground. Our listeners know that we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, we're going to focus on results and some of the studies that you were involved with Dr. Gonzalez. There's controversy about this therapy, and we'll take a look at some of the research that you've undertaken and some of the roadblocks that Dr. Gonzalez experienced on the way to validating his therapies. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Linda Isaacs, who is an internal medicine physician who is continuing in the tradition of her longtime partner, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, cancer treatment therapist extraordinaire for many decades here in New York. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.